As we prepare for this morning's study, if you want to go ahead and open your Bibles to Exodus chapter 20, we're going to flip there fairly early in our study as we initiate the study of Proverbs. As we mentioned last class, our study of Proverbs will be topical in nature, where we'll be moving from different topics, and this morning's will be the study of the fear of the Lord. And it's important for us to understand the context of what that's meaning to the people that he's presenting the messages to, but because it could have different meanings to each of us. If you don't have a copy of the topical list, we do have some more in the background. You can either get you one after class, or you can raise your hand now and get you one, but we'll take care of that. I only see one or two. I apologize in advance. My voice is a whole lot worse sounding than I feel, so bear with me. We indicated in our last study an introduction into the book of Proverbs, and we talked about the book of Proverbs having the theme that is the fear of the Lord. And there were three passages that we used in particular. Hey, Stuart, you turn the back TV on. And the theme of Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, which is listed in 1 and 7. It's reiterated again in chapter 9 and 10. To fear the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Solomon, after his near the end of his life, summarizes it again in Ecclesiastes, in Ecclesiastes 12, 13 through 14, where he says, the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So when we think about this as the theme of the book of Proverbs, I want us to understand who the audience was. Who was Solomon writing to? Because I think it's important for us to understand their unique view of fearing the Lord. Was this targeted at Gentiles in common? Who was it targeted to? It was targeted to the children of Israel. What unique perspective did the children of Israel have on fearing the Lord? What had he done for them? He gave them the law and the Ten Commandments. But what were some of the key things that would have been done that would have been convincing to them that God was all-powerful and worth fearing? Brought them out of Egypt. The Ten Commandments, the Ten Plagues, and I apologize for that. But here at Mount Sinai in Exodus 20, what had they just seen? This is a people that would have seen the destruction of the greatest kingdom available at that time and being taken out of their bondage through a sequence of plagues inflicted upon that nation. They would have seen the parting of the Red Sea and walked through it on dry ground. These are things that they would have experienced and would have been unique to their history, to their lore, to the things that would have been conveyed from children, from parent to child. We made the study comment in our study yesterday in the leadership series that it's key to teach the next generations. In the days of the judges, new generations came up that knew not God. Parents failing to teach their children. Well, these were the kinds of stories that they would have been teaching them so that they would understand how to fear the Lord. In Exodus chapter 20, and I want to just seize on this one particular one. Moses has gone up into the mountain already. In chapter 19, he's come down with the Ten Commandments, given them to the people. And they have said that we will be God's people. In verse 18, the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise and the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. And they said unto Moses, speak thou with us, and we will hear. Let not God speak with us, lest we what? Lest we die. They were afraid of God. Now, they were afraid of God because this would have been an amazingly awesome sight at Mount Sinai at that time. But they would have also already experienced the ravages that would have been inflicted upon the Egyptians as a result of the plagues. They knew God's power. Now, when we talk about having a fear of the Lord, there's different ways to establish fear, and some is just utter shuddering and being afraid of something happening. Other is, you know, I fear someone because, you know, they're consistent. You know, if I go against what they're telling me, they're going to be consistent in what they do. Was God consistent with his people in what he told them he would do? Absolutely. We look at the fulfillment of prophecy through time. He fulfilled his word each time with respect to prophecies. So they had reason to believe that just as a parent that admonishes a child and tells him, I'm going to do this if you disobey, that God would follow through on his word if his people disobeyed. And that's the basis for the fear of the Lord. So when we look at Proverbs 1 and 7, it says that to fear the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It's that motivator. It's that thing that's sitting there in the back of your mind that God has said that I'm going to do this. I expect you to obey, and that there will be consequences otherwise. Therefore, we should expect to follow through on our portion of the obedience unless we want to experience those consequences. So I think it's important to understand, like I said, the context of it. The children of Israel would have had a unique experience like that. The other people that worshipped idols in their day and time would have had no basis for that same type thing, because they could, their idols could not do anything. They could only interpret what they thought might be occurring. God, on the other hand, followed through consistently with what he was doing. It's the beginning of knowledge, but it's not an end point. The fear of the Lord, as I indicated, is a motivator. It's a starting point. It provides us to move us along. It provides a fear of injury in the case of if we are, prevents us from some activities. You know, I don't go skydiving because I don't want to hit the ground. I might even really enjoy it, but I don't do that. I don't play softball anymore because I don't like getting my nose broken. So those are things that fear of injury prevent us from doing stuff. And as we get older, we choose to do certain things less that we might have done as we were younger. Fear of the consequences of sin discourages participation. There are certain sins that, and the book of Proverbs makes comment about certain types of sins, the young man going into the woman and the sins associated with that. But the fear of those consequences of sin discourages participation in them. The fear of the Lord creates a cautious reminder. In the case of Rahab the harlot, what did the people of Jericho have in mind when they saw the Israelites starting to encamp and come up about them? Well, first off, they were afraid of the Israelites. But more notably, what had they already heard about what happened to the Egyptians? They had heard that the Egyptians had been destroyed as a result of that. And Rahab knew that if she wanted to be aligned and be saved with a group, she needed to be on the camp of the Israelites as opposed to the people of Jericho at this point. It was a cautious reminder at that point, a fear of the Lord. The Gibeonites had heard all of what God had done to the Egyptians. They went out and pulled together an elaborate ruse to be able to trick the Israelites into coming into a treaty with them, all because they feared the Lord. I'd say the fear of the Lord could be a paralyzer. In the case of the children of Israel at Mount Sinai, their fear of the thunderings and the roar and everything there prevented them from crossing the boundary. We have no evidence that any of the Israelites crossed the boundary that was set at Mount Sinai to prevent them from going up into the mountain. It could become, in some people's cases, a totalizing halt. And I made the point about the children of Israel. It is the beginning of knowledge. God's wisdom will guide and lead us. And some have asked, what material am I using as part of reference for the class material? I'm combining a couple of books. Most of this lesson is coming out of Robert Harkrider's book. I'm combining a couple of books because I've got 23 lessons to cover this time, and some of the lesson material is only broken up into 12 classes per quarter. But God's wisdom will guide and lead us. Proverbs 6, 22 and 23, the commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. It serves as the guiding wisdom. We give insights to our children and we hope that they follow. God has given insights and commandments to guide his people. And we see that throughout here. David mentioned in the Psalms, in Psalm 119, 105, your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. These are the commands that guided the people. If we look at the fear of the Lord, gives us strong confidence and honor. Excuse me. In Proverbs 14 and 26, someone would turn there and read that for me. Proverbs 14, 26. Okay, if we go to the idea that the fear of the Lord motivates his people in obedience, what kind of confidence can we as children of God have in that obedience? What promises do we have? God will be with us. Okay. We have, and here it talks about a place of refuge. In that day and time, God was with them to keep them safe, protect them physically, but also from our standpoint, if we're obedient to God, we have a promise of salvation. And that was one of the things they had to look forward to as well.
It's a permanent thing. God will be with us always. It's not just for a little while.
Very true. He has made that point. He would be with us. He's with us even when we're not with him. He's there. But I think the point in making this is that if we have that fear of the Lord and we stay in his commandments, that we can have that even stronger refuge and confidence. In verses 16 of Proverbs, it's better to have little with fear of the Lord than to be rich and lose it all at death. And we talked about the nature of Proverbs being short, succinct phrases that have a strong message to it. This is one of those messages that summarizes this idea. It makes the point again, it's better to live with a little and fear the Lord than to have all the physical blessings throughout the rest of the world. Because ultimately, the reward that we're seeking is not of this world, but is the world to come. The next passage associated, the fear of the Lord gives strong confidence and honor, is Proverbs 29 and 25. The fear of man brings a snare, but whoso puts his trust in the Lord shall be safe. Has anyone ever disappointed you on this earth? That's pretty obvious. We have all disappointed probably one another, even our closest family members at different times. If we put our trust in only man, are we ever going to be disappointed? That's an absolute. We will. But God, on the other hand, if we put our trust in him, is an absolute. You know, one of the things, and I've reiterated this to my children and different ones that I've studied with, one thing that I hang, it's kind of like a nail that you hang a point on, is that passage that says God cannot lie. That's an absolute. If I put my trust in that God cannot lie and I treat that as an absolute, then when I put my trust in Him, I'll always be safe. So, another short passage that makes the point in a very succinct way where we should be putting our trust. In Proverbs 15:33, wisdom's instruction is the fear of the Lord, and humility comes before honor. Wisdom's instruction is to fear the Lord. If you tie together the points that we've just been making, it's a whole lot smarter to trust in God than it is to trust in man. That's the point that's being made. The wise thing to do is to trust in God. The motivator behind that then is that we will obey Him, we'll study, we'll learn more about Him, and continue in His ways. As a continuation of a last passage, I want to make a point on the fear of the Lord gives strong confidence. Proverbs 31, 30 through 31. Of course, this is in the passage talking about the worthy woman. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Now, this is not necessarily talking about confidence, but it's talking about honor. This is an individual that has chosen to follow God's way, and as a result, is to be praised. Honor to be given upon them. Points in these passages here is that we can have confidence by our service and obedience to God. We can be honored and praised as a result of it as well. Not that we're seeking that honor and praise, but by our actions through our obedience to God, people will recognize our behavior as examples and praise us as a result of that. And if we look at what our purpose in life is and to be able to bring others to God and be an example to others, this exemplifies that particular idea. What does it mean to fear the Lord? It means to hate evil. In Proverbs 8 and 13, who can turn to 8:13 for me? Excuse me. That's correct. So the fear of the Lord is to hate evil and all of those things associated with it. It drives one to avoid particular things here. It says pride, arrogancy. Generically, it says the evil way, which in other passages would probably be categorized as disobedience. It talks about a froward mouth, someone who speaks inappropriately. And it makes the point that all of those are hated. So the fear of the Lord, and if we strike that down and distill it, our desire to be obedient to God that's motivated by our fear of the Lord drives us to hate evil. Proverbs 22:3-4. The prudent sees danger and hides himself. If we were to walk into a convenience store and we were in the midst of a robbery, what would be the prudent thing for us to do? The prudent thing would be to protect ourselves. If we were in the woods and we were confronted with a bear or a lion in the days of the children of Israel, what would have been the prudent thing for them to do? Hide from it, protect themselves from it. So here he's making that when the prudent sees danger, he hides himself. Now that doesn't mean that an individual that does so is coward in any way. But an individual doing so is protecting themselves to be able to take care of things that need to be taken care of. So if we look at and put this to practical application, when we see ourselves putting ourselves in danger spiritually, what should we do? We should run from it. We should hide from it. If we're about to be engaged in an activity as a young person that takes us into questionable circumstances, we need to leave. We need to plan to have, as a young person, need to plan to have a vehicle that we can get into and leave, not necessarily go with somebody else where you're stuck there. Need to be able to hide from it. Okay, well, I've gotten into a bad situation. I'm going to pick up that phone and call my parents, as bad as I hate to. But, this audience is a mixed crowd. I'm going to use some of these metaphors as some examples for young people and older alike, but the confidence here with respect to that would be we as older ones need to be able to make our children and grandchildren confident enough and trust in us enough to pick up that phone and call us when they're in need. Proverbs 16:6, fear the Lord, by the fear of the Lord, one turns away from evil. The fear of the Lord being a motivator to do what's right will cause someone to study and will cause someone to want to serve the Lord. And this point he's making here, the fear of the Lord turns away from, will cause one to turn away from evil. When you became a Christian, for those in this audience that are Christians, what was that first thing that motivated you to make that decision? For me, it was fear of being separated from God and lost in eternity. Fear of the Lord turns one away from evil. Fear of the Lord, in that particular case, turns one to want to serve God. Also means to trust in the Lord. In Proverbs 3, 5 through 7, could somebody read Proverbs 3, 5 through 7? What's the key admonition here? Well, the key admonition is to trust in the Lord. But the converse of that is what? Don't trust in yourself. Now, does that mean you can't trust any decision you ever make? Well, no. There's a level of confidence that you build up in things. But don't trust in yourself to bring your own salvation, is the point that he's making here. You can't choose to worship in your own way. Like the children of Israel in those days would build, they'd cut cordwood and have a, build a fire out part of it and carve an idol out of the other and bow down and worship in front of a piece of wood. They were accustomed at that time to trusting in what they created of their own hands. And that's the idea that he's making here, is that you can't trust in those type things. In Proverbs 14:12, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way to death. That's a perfect example of what we talked about, the children of Israel building an idol, falling down and worshiping in front of it, and cooking their food with another piece of the idol. In Proverbs 2:1-5, it means to keep his commandments. Proverbs 2:1-5, my son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide thy commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver and searchest for her as for hid treasures, thou shalt, so then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Whoever keeps the commandments keeps his life, in Proverbs 19:16. Back in the book of Deuteronomy, the children of Israel were instructed to bind in front of their eyes what? Frontlets. Now, that analogy is lost on most of us because we don't plow with animals and try to keep them moving straight. But put frontlets on our eyes so that we're focused ahead and not distracted by things of the world. There are some faults that one will get into without the fear of the Lord. And I want to switch the idea of, you know, before it's a motivator, here are some faults that individuals get into without the fear of the Lord. He deceives himself that his wisdom is best in Proverbs 16 and 25. In 16 and 25, I want to go ahead and read that passage. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. That fits with the passage in 12:15. The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but the wise man listens to advice. Have you ever been told you were stubborn? Okay. I get told I'm stubborn all the time. So my children are grinning as this goes on. Sometimes we take pride in the fact that we are hard-headed and we beat our heads against the wall and we work our way through certain things. And there's a certain amount of that that's probably healthy and a certain amount that's definitely not healthy. But the point he makes here is that, you know, a fool thinks that anything he does is right in his own eyes just because of his innate wisdom or smarts or I don't know, arrogance. Whether it's based on fact or based on any premise, you know, charge right in and do it. Other passages in the Bible illustrate this and say, you know, an individual that goes to build a tower, he counts the cost in advance before he proceeds. Well, that's the opposite of what a fool might do. A fool might just go in and start digging the foundation and just keep going. In Proverbs 14 and 16, he is confident that his evil will not reap sorrow. Proverbs 14 and 16. Wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. Parallel passage of that in Proverbs 10 and 23, doing wrong is like a joke to a fool, but wisdom is pleasure to a man of understanding. If we make light of doing evil, and in this particular case it says, you know, doing wrong is like a joke to a fool. How many times you've seen somebody do something wrong and really just kind of joke about it? We are cautioned about that when in our language when we tell jokes. You know, our language, whether it's a coarse joke or something, and we'll tell a joke and we have to be cautious how we laugh about it. When we choose to do something that is questionable in its wisdom, whether it's wholesome in its behavior, we might joke about that a bit. And the world does that with regularity. You see the mocking comparisons the illustration I'll try to use here is it the characterization of Southern rednecks is, hey y'all, watch this, because that's going to be preceded by calamity the next thing that happens as somebody goes off and as they're holding their beer they jump their car into a ditch or something. It's the false sense of that I'm going to be okay regardless of what I choose to do. Consequences follow as a result of that. You know, as a child, we are oftentimes, we don't necessarily know what to fear. I can remember building ramps on my street and riding my bike as fast as I could go and jumping the ramp to see how far I could jump it. But I obviously didn't have the knowledge necessarily to know that the ramps that I built weren't always stable. And if I hit them the wrong way, I would go skidding off and need stitches. Okay. You know, they all have consequences. And they all have to be thought through and planned through. Doing wrong can be a joke to a fool. But it will end up having severe consequences. Faults that will occur, particularly here in 14 and 9, he says that a fool, someone that chooses not to fear the Lord, will mock at sin. In 14 and 9, it says, fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. There are people that, due to their nature, due to how they view their actions in life, whether it be from a financial standpoint, there are businessmen that, well, I'm out to get mine regardless of what the rest of the people are. We have examples of insider trading events that occur where people, I have my inside knowledge, I'll take advantage of it to the detriment of other people. And don't really consider that to be a mockery of sin. They just consider it to be smart business practice. This is an example here that's emphasized again in the passage that fools mock at the guilt offering, but the upright enjoy acceptance. You know, if I go in and I'm making my, in their day and time, making the guilt offering, and I'm just making a mockery of it because I'm going to turn right back around and do the exact same sins I've been doing the last year, there's no real advantage or benefit in that sacrifice. There are two destinies of life that he makes the point for in this lesson. Those who fear the Lord will find happiness in Proverbs 3, 13 through 18. Proverbs 3, 1 through 4, for the length of days and years of life and peace, they will add to you. Now, that's not necessarily a promise that God just says, I'm going to give you long life if you obey me. Because we know individuals that have been faithful to the Lord that whose lives have been taken short. But an individual that fears the Lord and follows his commandments oftentimes avoids many activities that are going to take your life early. Guilt by association, so to speak, or activities that are going to take you into an environment that where you'll be tempted to do evil that shorten your life. Trouble follows the fool who rejects God's wisdom. Let's say I'm a thief and I regularly reject God's wisdom and go in and rob liquor stores or some other type of event. You know, I'm in the drug trade. I'm running with a pretty bad rough crowd at that point, and there's a high probability at some point I'm going to lose my physical life. Proverbs 28 and 14 says, happy is the man that feareth alway, but he that hardeneth his heart shall fall into mischief. Since it mentions the word there in that passage, hardens one's heart, who can you think of as most noted as having hardened their heart to their detriment? Pharaoh. That key word there would have also played off of the teaching here to teach the children of Israel, because they would have recognized that. But Pharaoh, to the detriment of his entire people, hardened his heart over and over again. Proverbs 13 and 13. Whoever despises the word brings destruction on himself, but he who reveres the commandment will be rewarded. That's pretty clear to us as Christians, is that if we follow God's commandment, we have a promise to look forward to. And if we look at the contrast to that, we've made the point again and this is a good example. This is a contrasting proverb. It's a negative followed by a positive. You know, here's the negative aspect, and here's the positive aspect that comes about as a consequence. But whoever despises the word brings destruction on himself. Can you think of any Bible characters that despised God's word and brought destruction on themselves? How about Ahab? Jezebel. They definitely did. Pretty graphically. Judas did. So I want to take some time as we close out this morning's study looking at individuals who feared the Lord and individuals that did not fear the Lord and how they fit into the category of this discussion in Proverbs. Individuals who feared the Lord. Job was put through immense physical suffering. But when his wife asked him, why did he not curse God and die? What did he do? Did he acquiesce and say, I'm going to follow your word? No. He continued to serve God and fear God. He ended up challenging and asking God, why did this come upon me? And he got some pretty stern rebukes in that as well. But throughout the entire book of Job, you see an individual who feared God and respected him in spite of all of the things that he had to go through. What about Joseph? Joseph just rock solid for me. The illustrations in children's classes where you put, you know, walnut in a jar of rice and you shake it and you see him rise to the top of the rice after every adversity is so visual. But Joseph, when he was tempted by Potiphar's wife, what did he say? How could I do such wickedness against my master and my God? He feared God. This is a kid that had been sold into slavery at 17 and abandoned by his brothers and had really no reason to hope, did he? But he feared God and continued and became what? The second in command in the greatest kingdom of that day. Joshua. We sing a song, talks about Joshua and says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That was out of that fear. Moses had prepared Joshua to take over and to be a leader, to lead the people and teach them. And in that one statement, he set the tone for what that nation needed to follow. Daniel. What can you think about Daniel? That's exactly right. When the command was given that individuals pray to no one but to the king, he went to his window and he prayed. The fear of the Lord drove him to do the things that were right. And the rest of the consequences didn't matter. We can see the same thing, the fear of the Lord, even in the very early chapters, when he went and asked to be able to not eat of the king's delicacies, but to eat of the foods. It drove him as a motivator to do the right thing. Had to take a lot of courage as well to go before Nebuchadnezzar and convey the meaning of the dream when they had already been told that all the wise men of the nations were going to be killed. You know, relating these same stories and these characters to this particular topic, I think it's really important. Examples who failed to fear the Lord, and the Bible is full of them. What did Balaam really want out of all of the efforts that he went through? He wanted money, did he not? He wanted the money that he was promised for coming down and cursing the children of Israel. Even so much so that we have a very comical story associated with Balaam that's related to us about his donkey talking to him. Because it ultimately took that donkey talking to him and his eyes being open so he can see the angel in advance for him to wake up that he's not going to be allowed to curse the children of Israel. Jeroboam, we mentioned this in our leadership study yesterday about poor leaders and individuals that made bad choices. Jeroboam did not fear the Lord, and as a result, chose to go in his own wisdom and place idol worship in the northern kingdom. God had promised him that if he would follow his commandments, he would establish his kingdom. But he didn't fear the Lord. He feared the physical aspects of losing physical control and went to his own wisdom. Nebuchadnezzar could be treated in several ways, but I find this one very interesting. When Nebuchadnezzar looked out and thought that, you know, basically he was the greatest thing that had ever walked the earth with respect to a king, what did God take from him? He took his mind and let him, you know, graze in the field as a beast of the fields until he came to the realization that there was a power far greater than he. And then he was returned to his throne. Herod the Great, when he took the praise of the people that he was a god and did not correct the people, what happened to him? He died. He was struck with worms and died. So we could look at a lot of other examples, but I think those are key to establishing the idea that the fear of the Lord is a motivator for us to serve Him faithfully so that we can reap the rewards of life eternal and the benefits that come today in this physical world of just living a righteous life. Any comments before we dismiss? Mike makes the points in Hebrews 12 that the reason to serve the Lord is that He is a consuming fire. And, you know, the consequences will come about as a result of our disobedience. Thank you for your attention.